Ready to roll?
We are rolling.
Thank you. Good evening. This is the City of Morro Bay City Council meeting. It is the regular meeting, Tuesday, August the 10th, 2021. It is 5:31 p.m. This meeting is being held via teleconference pursuant to Executive Order Number N08-21 issued by Governor Newsom on June 11th, 2021. This meeting will be conducted telephonically through Zoom and broadcast live on cable channel 20 and streamed on the city website. Please be advised that pursuant to the executive order and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread the COVID-19 virus, the Veterans Hall will not be open for this meeting. Public participation will be either via Zoom, and the link will be placed on the screen when appropriate, and or you may also call in, and that number will be placed on the screen as well. And if we could, Madam Clerk, establish a quorum, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Addis?
Here.
Councilmember Barton has not joined us yet. Councilmember Heller?
Here.
And Mayor Hedding?
Present. We do have a quorum. I will call the meeting to order. And I think it would be appropriate this evening to ask for our moment of silence to be in memory of Councilmember Red Davis, who recently passed. So in your own way, if you could remember Councilmember Davis during this moment of silence. Thank you.
Thank you. And if we could have the flag for our Pledge of Allegiance, please. To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And that'll bring us to closed session report. Mr. Niermeyer, do we have any closed session report this evening, sir?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. No closed session items to report tonight.
Thank you very much. And that brings us to council member reports. I'm sure that all of us have heard recently of the passing of council member Red Davis. It was a great loss, not only for Red's family, but also for this community. We had yesterday a wonderful celebration of life in Cloisters Park, honoring Red, it was extremely well attended, and we had the opportunity to recognize all of his accomplishments and recognize his family and gather together to thank them for all that they've done in backing Red up during his tenure on the council. My heart is very heavy this evening. Red was not only a friend, but a colleague who loved the city of Morro Bay, who loved serving the city of Morro Bay, but also loved the people of Morro Bay. And he expressed that at almost every council meeting by recognizing community members or businesses that touched his heart and touched our hearts. And I personally tonight will miss that very much. We will be presenting to the family a proclamation recognizing Councilmember Davis shortly. But again, I want to thank city staff and all of those involved yesterday for arranging the event at Cloisters Park. It truly was a wonderful celebration. We had numerous folks from throughout the county attend, as well as many of our elected officials across the county, state, and federally, as well as a large number of community members. And for that, I am very grateful and thank you. So thank you, staff, for all that you did to make that happen and everybody that was involved in putting that together. It truly was an honoring event that I very much felt that, until I'm having a little bit of a hard time here, touched my heart greatly, and I thank you for that. With that, I do have a general report. Unfortunately, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the coronavirus or COVID-19 is not gone, and I routinely, as mayor and a healthcare practitioner, reported fairly routinely, and then as things got better, stopped giving reports, but I do tonight, as part of my report, want to point out several things. The number of cases in San Luis Obispo County is on the rise, and we are beginning to see a significant number of what we call variants of COVID-19 virus. There are five variants that have been identified in San Luis Obispo County. I would name them. The one you're most familiar with is the Delta virus. However, the Epsilon is the most prevalent in the county. We've seen 267 cases of that, 175 of the Alpha variant, 58 of the Delta, 27 of the Gamma, and 8 of the Beta. These variants are 20 to 50% more transmissible than prior COVID or the original COVID-19 virus. Therefore, it's very, very concerning that we're beginning to see a large number or percentage of the cases involving the variants. Right now, as of today, since January 21st up to today, 98.5% of all new cases in San Luis Obispo County have occurred in non-vaccinated patients. 97.5% of all hospitalizations in the county since January to today have occurred in non-vaccinated patients. And 99.2% of deaths since January 21st to today have occurred in non-vaccinated patients. I believe you're beginning to hear a theme. And I can't express to you the importance of getting vaccinated against this virus and what it means to protecting the public health of not only those that currently are not vaccinated, but even those that are vaccinated with regard to transmission of these new variants. The case rate in San Luis Obispo County has risen from 1.4 per 100,000 in January to currently 30.8. That's literally a 25 times rise in the case rate in San Luis Obispo County. Our positivity rate has gone from 0.8 to 6.8 per 100,000. At present, 60% of our population in San Luis Obispo County is vaccinated. Fully. Partial vaccinations were at about 67%, but unfortunately, 33.1% of our population is not currently vaccinated. For unvaccinated individuals, the issue is the significant possibility of transmitting variants to both vaccinated and non-vaccinated individuals. And there continue to be numerous vaccination sites available, literally every retail pharmacy, many doctor's offices, county has stand-up clinics that they offer. And if you go to readyslow.org on that website, you can get information as to where these locations are. One of the issues I will tell you that even if you are vaccinated, and I'll just use the Pfizer vaccine as an example, if you were vaccinated in January, you had about a 95% effectiveness rate over a six-month period. That decreases to approximately 68%. So the longer you go, even having been vaccinated, the lower the percentage of protection that remains available to you occurs. And although there is no recommendation for a booster dose for any of the vaccines that are out there right now for COVID-19, it's my sense that that recommendation will come soon, and I would encourage you to watch the data from the CDC regarding that recommendation. Recommendations for the California Department of Public Health for masks are the following. For all individuals, whether vaccinated or not vaccinated, when traveling on public transit, when in any healthcare setting, including doctor's offices, hospitals, etc., for K through 12 schools, correctional facilities, emergency shelters, long-term care facilities, and homeless shelters, masks are recommended for both vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals. For unvaccinated members of the public, it is recommended that in all indoor settings, including retail, restaurants, theaters, meetings, state and local offices, etc., that you wear a mask. And again, these are directly from the California Department of Public Health. The San Luis Obispo County currently does not have a mask mandate. And so I encourage you to visit either the CDC website or the California Department of Public Health website. We are fighting this virus again, and probably will continue to do that. The way out of this is to get vaccinated. And I am highly pleading with our community members across the county, if you're not vaccinated, please do get vaccinated. Thank you. With that, Councilmember Hiller, sir, do you have any announcements?
I do. Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the fine service that you led for Councilmember Davis yesterday. It was extremely well done and very moving, and I appreciate your leadership in stepping up and leading that event. I also would like to welcome Chief McCrane, I think, to your first meeting, Chief. Welcome aboard. I see you're there you are. Glad to have you here. I know we had official welcoming recently, but it's nice to see you here virtually, and wanted to welcome you to, I think, your first formal regular council meeting. And then my way of honoring Councilmember Davis is to kind of pick up where he left off. It is quite remarkable that at the beginning of every meeting, he would recognize a community member who was special or had done something extraordinary for our city. And I would like to recognize a person who refuses to tell me her real name, but she says her friends call her Broom Hilda. Now, if you ever walk from the Embarcadero out to the Rock along the boardwalk, it's very likely you will run into Broom Hilda, because she takes it upon herself twice a day to go out to the boardwalk with her broom and brush off the sand where it tends to accumulate, right, where people unload their cars and take their kayaks down to the beach there and launch their kayaks. And I've seen her on a number of occasions because I walk out there regularly. And I've asked her, what is your name? She won't tell me. I say, why are you doing this? Are you part of a club? Do you belong to Moral Be Beautiful or some other organization? She says, no, I just do this because it needs to be done. And I love doing it. So to Broom Hilda and or your friends or relatives, wherever you are, thank you so much for your efforts. They're very much appreciated, and you're a remarkable community member. Those are my comments, Mayor. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that great recognition, Councilmember Heller. We appreciate that, and we'll look for Broomhilda as we travel across the city. Councilmember Addis, please, announcements.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, and I want to welcome Red's family and just say thank you for coming this evening to receive the proclamation. And the thing that I will miss the most is getting to sit next to Red and look over at his computer and see Gail's photo there and just get to hear about his family at the breaks. That's what we would do, would kind of chat, and he would tell me about Catherine's adventures. And most of the time that we spent together was really just talking about personal things and finding out about one another. So I just appreciate Red and his memory and will greatly miss him on council. And wanted to echo the welcome to Chief McCrane and also say that I was able to attend the pinning of a new sergeant and recognize the retirement of another officer of Morro Bay. And when I went to that ceremony last week or the week before, that was the comment that the chief made, was Red would show up to every single one of these. He was the council member that we will, you know, most miss his presence, because he was at every single one of those ceremonies. And really, I know Gail was there with him quite a bit, which is why she's known as the sixth council member, but just want to appreciate Red and his family for that. And then one more story is that I attended HAB this month. And again, the chair, Cerise Hansen, when she opened up, she said, I don't think I would be on HAB if not for Red. So there's so many people across our community that really benefited from him, but also because of him, our council and our community have been made better. And everywhere I've been across the last 2 weeks, people have said that about him. So I very much want to appreciate that and just celebrate the new people that are with us now, today, and look forward to the resolution. And thank you, Mayor, for your speech. And to all of city staff for the celebration that we had over the weekend, or on Monday, yesterday.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. Very much appreciate that. Councilmember Barton, please, your announcements.
I, too, would like to thank you, Mayor Heading, for the lovely ceremony yesterday. It was just such a, it was just very, very touching, and hit on so many of Red's fine qualities and introducing his family, and it just was lovely. And it was also lovely when it broke up and you could turn around and see how many hundreds of people were there, and people that, because of COVID, we haven't run into necessarily lately, and it was very nice to be able to shake hands and, you know, say hello to people. I'd also like to welcome our new fire chief, and I got to meet him there among the people, and welcome aboard. We're happy to have you. So that's it.
Great, and thank you so much for that, Councilmember Barton. And I will turn to Mr. Collins, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, council members, members of the community. We wanted to just thank the family, Catherine in particular, for working with us to put on the event to honor, you know, the family and honor Red in such a touching way. And thank you so much. I know grieving and trying to do that at the same time must have been really challenging, but we're so thankful we could honor Red in the way we were able to yesterday, and the sun came out for that. On another news, yes, you know, the council member stole my thunder in announcing Chief McCrane, who started with us on July 31st, I want to say, and so thankful that he's already hit the ground running, joining us from Cambria Fire, where he was a captain, and just really excited the energy he's bringing to the team and the direction he's going to take our fire department. We want to announce that I believe beginning next week, I don't know specifically what day, but we'll put it on our website, the bike path down by Lila Kaiser will be closed, and it will be closed for a significant portion of time while we begin construction of the pipeline for the WARF project in that vicinity. So we will be putting out information to that effect, but just wanted to let people know So they'll have to find another way to get around town. And we understand that's an inconvenience, but it's an important thing to get done and to stay on track with our project. Last but not least, we are taking input from the community for our city council goals. Right now, there is a poll available for folks to take part in on Polco. You just go to polco.us/Morro Bay, polco.us/Morro Bay. And if you never use the service, you'll just need to create an account. And we're just looking for input to help inform City Council's goal-setting process, which will kick off the second meeting of this month and then another meeting in late September. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate that very much. At this time, I want to recognize this evening the fact that we have Red's beautiful and lovely wife, Gail, in the audience. Hi, Gail. I see you there. Catherine, his daughter. Catherine, hello again. And Pat, Red's son-in-law, welcome to you. I want you to say hello to Caitlin, but also especially to Sarah, if you would, for me, and let her know that I mentioned her name this evening. Those are Red's granddaughters who were at the Celebration of Life event yesterday, but I wanted to say hi to Sarah tonight as well. Thank you for being here this evening. We have a proclamation honoring Councilmember Davis. If I can get through this, bear with me. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, and it reads as follows. Whereas Robert Red Davis began his service as a council member for the City of Morro Bay in December of 2016, and won a second full four-year term in November of 2020, and left an indelible mark on the community through efforts with his city council colleagues and city staff to do the following: improve city infrastructure, including the water and sewer system through the Water Reclamation Facility Project, improve communication and engagement with the community, expand open spaces in Morro Bay through the purchase of Cerrito Peak and Dog Beach, advocate for responsible offshore wind development that will help address climate change while mitigating impacts to our local fishing community, stabilize city finances during the once-in-a-century pandemic so that the city could continue to provide critical services to the community, approve the city's general plan following years of community discussion, paving a way for the smart development, expanded the utility discount program to more members of the community, and improved relationships with and support for the local business community through the partnership with the Chamber of Commerce, the COVID-19 Small Business Grant Program, and the improvements made to the city's planning process, among other initiatives. And it reads further, whereas prior to being elected to the City Council, Robert Red Davis admirably served on a variety of city and ad hoc committees, including the General Plan Advisory Committee. And whereas Robert Red Davis served on San Luis Obispo County of Government, or SLOCOG's, Citizens Transportation Advisory Committee during his tenure as committee member from 2002 to 2016. Whereas beginning in 2018, Robert Red Davis served the San Luis Obispo region as alternate board member 2018 and as board member 2019 to 2021 for SLOCOG and the Regional Transit Authority, representing the citizens of the City of Morro Bay and the San Luis Obispo County region. Whereas Robert Red Davis has been a strong advocate for transit and bicycling, building the public's trust, downtown revitalization, economic development, and capital improvements throughout the San Luis Obispo region. Whereas Robert Red Davis volunteered for numerous community organizations, including the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, Friends of the Morro Bay Library, and Bike Slow County.
And whereas Robert Red Davis effectively championed the implementation of a balanced, integrated, multimodal transportation system that served the region and helped facilitate the following advocacy partnership and funding successes throughout the work in the following areas. Served as a founding member of the San Luis Obispo County Bicycle Coalition in 2001, now known as Bike Slo County. His dedicated work was the inspiration for the annual Red Davis Celebration that recognizes advocates, professionals, businesses, and volunteers. Inspired the County Board of Supervisors, who recognized Red's leadership and designated Los Osos Valley Road the Red Davis Bikeway. Worked with conservation groups to bring the Chevron property under public ownership, paving the way for the Morro Bay to Cayucas Coastal Connector Trail. Served as a leader in Morro Bay's 2011 Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, including installation of the protected Safe Routes to School crossing at Atascadero Avenue and Morro Bay High School and Morro Creek Bike Pedestrian Bridge. Championed numerous other regional and local active transportation policies, programs, and projects, including parklets and wayfinding, as well as bringing major cycling tourism events like the Amgen Tour of California to our region. Advocated for deploying best practices in transportation, mobility, and safety through the support as a Citizens Transportation Advisory Committee member for the Morro Bay Boulevard Quintana Road Roundabout and Gateway Project, and most recently, the State Route 1, State Route 41 North Main Street Improvement Project as a SLOCOG board member. Served as a strong advocate for expanding broadband speed access and affordability to reduce the need to drive. Promoted affordable housing and innovative infill projects to help meet the city and region's housing targets. And whereas Robert Red Davis has been an integral part of the City of Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo County's effort to support sustainable, healthy, economically vibrant communities by addressing land use, transportation, and environmental considerations at the local, regional, and state level. And whereas Red will always be remembered by the city and community for his kindness and openness in everything that he did, now therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby thank Robert Red Davis for his dedicated service to San Luis Obispo County and the Morro Bay community, and we wish love and strength to his family and many friends during this difficult time. Gail, thank you so much for sharing this beautiful man and council member with our city. And thank you so much for being a strong partner that not only said yes when Red got into community service, but stood by him, not only that, but assisted him and was his partner in making things happen. And for that, we will be forever grateful and just want to share with you our love and heartfelt feelings of loss, and thank you for Red's service to our community. And if possible, if any of the family members would like to speak, we would invite you to share a few words. I don't know if your mic's on. Check your mic. Pat, who's working the mic there? Yeah. Lower left-hand corner where it says mute. Dana, do we have them turned on?
It doesn't appear that they're muted.
It doesn't?
No.
Okay.
Mayor, while they're figuring out their mic, I just want to add that even though Red's not with us, Gail, we're still here, and we're still here as a community for you. We hope to see you, whether it's at council or at community events.
Thank you. Having technical difficulties, unfortunately. Yeah. Well, thank you again so much. We appreciate you being here tonight. And again, Red will remain in our hearts forever. And as Councilmember Addis said, we are here for you as a community during this time. And so thank you again so much for being here tonight. With that, do the wave thing. Thank you. With that, I will go ahead and move us to public comment. This is general public comment for items on the agenda for which you cannot stay and would like to speak, or for items that are not on the agenda. And on the screen, of course, we have the information that you may use to access either via the Zoom link that's there and or the phone numbers that are listed. Be sure if you do that to use your raise hand sign if you want to be recognized, and or *9 if you're calling in, and you do have 3 minutes. And with that, the general public comment is now open. And do we have any general public comment, Anthony or Helen?
Yeah, I'm seeing a couple raised hands here. First up, we have Aaron Oakes.
Okay. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, members of the council and staff. I'm Aaron Oakes of Morro Bay. I am truly deeply moved by the proclamation that you've given to Mr. Davis's, Councilman Davis's family. He was larger than life. His accomplishments are profound, limitless. I mean, he is the definition of a life well lived. And my heart goes out to Gail and Catherine and Davis's family during this extremely difficult time. And I also want to reiterate what the other council members have said, which is that the community stands with the Davis family. Red will always be in our hearts, and we will do anything we possibly can to honor Councilman Davis's memory in any way we can. And, you know, my heart goes out to the Davis's family, and I think about him all the time. As a former volunteer of Morro Bay and Bloom, I had the fortune of working alongside him in gardening, and he was just a gentle soul, a kind spirit, and I always enjoyed hearing his laugh and his telling me all stories about his life, and it's a tragic loss, and I think that we will move forward in Morro Bay in a better place because of Red Davis. So I also wanted to welcome our new fire chief, Dan McCrane, to Morro Bay. Welcome. I'm excited to speak with you about, you know, local issues with regard to our fire services. And hopefully when this Delta variant isn't so much of a problem, we can meet face to face and talk about these things. The reason I'm speaking today is about what has happened with the Department of Justice investigation with regarding Natural Healing Center's founder, Helios Dayspring. And I would like the city to consider an outside investigation into the permitting process. Ultimately, the goal that I have is for the city to look at canceling this license, because I think it's a problem in the community that's going to keep coming up again and again and again. And I'll be more than happy to discuss this with members of the council at a later time. Thank you very much, everybody, for your wonderful words on Red. Have a good day.
Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate your recognition of Councilmember Davis, and thank you for your recommendation as well. Next public speaker, public comment, Harlan?
Yes, we have Betty Winholtz in the queue.
Welcome, Betty.
Thank you very much. This is Betty Winholtz. I have an announcement and I have a question. My announcement is that on Thursday Farmers Market, I and others will be out at Spencer's collecting signatures for people who would like to see the community vote on whether or not we should have camping, tent or RV camping on the Embarcadero in Coleman. And if you would like to see the residents of the community make that decision as opposed to the council, we'll be out there from 2 to 4, the hours of the market, and you're welcome to come sign that if you are a registered voter in Morro Bay. My question is, are we still on track to be meeting in person at the Vets Hall in September? Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Next public comment.
There are no more commenters in the queue, Mayor Heading.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'll go ahead and close general public comment, bring it back to council, and ask, let's see, Chris, current status of the governor's order with regard to public meetings, and Mr. Collins, if you want to comment briefly on what we're looking at as a council and city with regard to getting back to public meetings. Thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, council members. The governor, of course, back when the pandemic started, suspended certain provisions of the Brown Act allowing teleconferencing for public meetings like the Morro Bay Council meeting. The latest order from the governor has that amendment to the Brown Act to suspend, to terminate at the end of September. Right now I have not heard anything about the governor extending that deadline. Of course, as the mayor summarized at the beginning of the meeting, it seems that the pandemic's still in play in terms of infection rates. So I don't have a crystal ball on whether the governor is going to extend it any further. But as it stands right now, public meetings need to begin as of October 1st, 2021, pursuant to governor's order.
Yeah, and parlay on that, we're working with the AGP to create a situation where we could have a hybrid meeting, both for folks who want to participate online and those who potentially could provide, watch the meeting in person and provide public comment in person. Not sure we're going to make that. And as the mayor said, there's a significant rise in the cases. And so it's hard to know specifically where it's going. But, our goal is to be capable of having in-person meetings by the end of September.
Thank you both for that update. I appreciate that very much. And with that, that will bring us to our consent agenda. This is item A on our agenda this evening. A public comment for items on the consent agenda is now open. And I'll ask MayGP, do we have anybody in the queue for public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are no commenters in the queue.
Okay. I'll go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council, and ask this. Feedback. Sorry. Councilmember Adams, maybe. Yeah, there we go. Perfect. Any feedback there? None. All right. Thank you. I'll either entertain a motion for approval of the consent agenda, or if anybody wants to pull an item, I'd be happy to go ahead and do that.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Addis to approve consent agenda, second by Councilmember Heller. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and do a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Great. Thank you. That completes the consent agenda, brings us to our first item tonight. This is a public hearing, item B1. This is a public hearing for the adoption of resolution number 56-21 for minor revisions to the adopted fiscal year 21-22 master fee schedule. And I will go ahead and ask for the staff report, followed by council questions, and then I will open up the public hearing, entertain public comment. After that, I will close the public comment, close the public hearing, and bring it back to entertain a motion or further discussion. That's the process we will use for this item. And with that, I turn it over first to Mr. Collins, I believe. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And I recognize that after he'd introduced new Fire Chief Dan McCrane, that we also needed to introduce our new Assistant City Manager, Sarah Johnson-Rios. She started the day after our last council meeting back in June, which seemed like an eternity ago.
I thought this was her first meeting.
It is. I know. I was quickly reminded by her city clerk. So we are delighted to have Sarah join the team and provide this first presentation to City Council. Take it away, Sarah. Thank you.
Welcome, Sarah.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Collins, and good evening, Mayor Heading and members of the City Council. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen and get started. I'm very happy to be with the City of Morro Bay, so thank you for the introduction. Let's see. So this public hearing before you tonight is some minor revisions to the master fee schedule, which Council adopted back in May. And so just a reminder of the City's annual process is to review and revise the master fee schedule, which specifies certain charges for city-provided services. And these are the services that go beyond the general services that are covered by taxpayer expense. So these are the fees for service that provide some direct material benefit to an individual. And so, as I mentioned, you did approve this master fee schedule on May 11th. Staff realized that there are three fees or fee descriptions that need to be slightly revised for alignment with state law and for clarity. And so those fees are the wide load permit fees, both annual and one-time fees. The Morro Bay master fee schedule had those set just slightly higher than the state of California. And so those will be reduced to be in alignment with state law there. And then the fee description on the temporary encroachment agreement fee will be revised to make it clearer what that fee covers. And so with that, the recommendation tonight is to conduct the public hearing and then adopt resolution number 5621, which implements these minor revisions to the fiscal year 21-22 master fee schedule. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Sarah. Very much appreciate that. Go ahead and open it up. If there are any council questions, go ahead and raise your hand now. And if you have any questions of Sarah on this item. Seeing no raised hands, okay. I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. And AGP, I'll go ahead and open up public comment now. Do we have any public comment on item B-1?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It looks like we have no raised hands in the queue.
All right. I will close public comment on item B1 and close the public hearing. I'll bring it back to council and either entertain a motion or further discussion on this item.
I'll move this item forward.
Okay.
I'll second.
Motion by Council Member Addis for staff recommendation on item B1, seconded by Council Member Heller. Is there any further discussion on this item?
Yes, Mayor, I would like to say welcome to Sarah. I'm remiss in not acknowledging and recognizing you along with Chief McCrane, and had the pleasure of spending a little time getting to know you over coffee. And I know Scott Collins is thrilled to have you on board, and I am as well. So welcome to the City of Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Council Member Heller. Appreciate that. I know, Sarah, it seemed like you've been here so long that you've been in your third meeting.
I'll take it.
Great. Any further discussion on this item? We do have a motion and a second. Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and do a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
So, Sarah, mark down your first win.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate the presentation. That brings us to our business items this evening. First item up is consideration. This is item C1, by the way. Consideration of appointment of Robert Nava to the Public Works Advisory Board and reappointment of Susan Stewart to the Planning Commission consistent with council approval of special requirement for non-resident. And with that, I believe I'm turning this over to our city clerk, Dana Swanson. Dana?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and you introduced it perfectly. Two items for the council to consider tonight. The first would be to interview and consider the appointment of Robert Nava to fill an unscheduled vacancy on the Public Works Advisory Board for a term ending January 31st, 2023. And then to consider the reappointment of Susan Stewart to the Planning Commission. Mr. Nava has joined us, and with your permission, I will promote him so that the council can meet him.
Yes, please.
And I will turn it over to you, Mr. Mayor.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Nava. Welcome. Let's see. Where is he there? Am I seeing him? Ah, there you are. Can you hear me, Mr. Nava? You're muted. You'll need to take your mute off. Dana, do we have him muted, or is it a local issue?
Right here. I think he's got it now.
Oh, there we go. Okay, Mr. Nava, do you have a camera, video camera?
I do, and I will start video now.
There you are. Welcome.
Great.
And we know that you had applied during the last time that we did interviews for this position, but unfortunately had a family emergency and weren't able to be there. So we're glad you're interested again. What I'll do is go ahead and ask you to just give us a little information as to why you're interested in appointment to our PWAB, Public Works Advisory Board, and then see if there are any questions from our council. And council, I will take action separately on these items, first for Mr. Nava and then consideration of the second part of the item. So, Mr. Nava, welcome.
Thank you. Great. Yes, I've been a resident here in Morro Bay for about 14 years. I'm very proud to be a resident of Morro Bay, and I have also worked for the Department of Transportation for almost 20 years now, and as I see an opportunity to participate and give back to the city of Morro Bay, I wanted to jump on this opportunity with the vacancy and hope that I can help serve.
Great, thanks. And we do have the application that you filled out and your resume as well. We appreciate that. And I'll ask any council members if they have questions before we consider Mr. Nava's appointment. Jeff, Councilmember Heller, you're muted. You're muted, Jeff. There you go.
Robert, thanks for joining us, and thank you for expressing your interest again in being on the Public Works Advisory Board. From what I can tell about your background, you're exactly the kind of person that would benefit from your experience. And I understand you have some experience with capital improvement projects. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, primarily with capital improvement projects. I worked in the maintenance division under the maintenance engineer, and we were tasked with projects under $300,000, and we would develop, I was on a team, and we would develop the plans, specifications, and estimates for projects that went out to bid. I tended to lean more towards emergency opening projects when any of our state highways within District 5 needed help. Prior to that, I worked in the construction management division of Caltrans, and that's where I'm at now. I'm back with the construction division.
Well, that's great. I think you're going to be a great asset to PWAP. So thank you again for putting your hat back in the ring again. And those are my questions, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Other council questions of Mr. Nava? Councilmember Addis.
I don't have a question, but I know Mr. Nava well and appreciate you reapplying. And I think it's an honor for the city. I see you as a real contributor. And so I'm happy that we're able to consider this evening.
Great. Thanks for those comments. Any other questions or comments? Looking for hands. Seeing none. All right. Well, Mr. Nava, you certainly have the requisite skill set that I believe our city needs for a position like this, and am overjoyed that you reapplied and are back here. And I'm happy to go ahead and recommend that we appoint Robert Nava to the Public Works Advisory Board for the remainder of the term ending January 31st, 2023.
I'll second.
Motion by Mayor Hedding to approve Mr. Nava. Second by Councilmember Addis. Any further discussion? Well, you know what I should do? I apologize. Let me back up one step and remember that I need to go to public comment on this first for this item for Mr. Nava's appointment. Do we have any public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We do not have any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thanks. I'll close public comment. Again, my apologies. A month off, you forget your protocol. So with that, we do have a motion and a second. And unless there are any other comments, I will go ahead and ask for a roll call vote.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Congratulations, Mr. Nava. Thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to helping.
Welcome, Robert, and again, appreciate you being here this evening, and thanks for your volunteerism. That brings us to the second half of item C1. This is a consideration of the reappointment of Susan Stewart to the Planning Commission for the remainder of the term ending January 31st, 2023, with formal approval of special requirement that her non-residency in Morro Bay will be accepted for this appointment due to unique and qualifying circumstances. And I might ask our city attorney, Chris Neumeyer. Chris, could you just give us a brief overview of how a non-resident could possibly be appointed to such a position? I think it would be good for the public to hear that.
Sure. It's an interesting question because, of course, council members need to be residents and voters of the city to serve on the council. However, contrary to what one might think, there is a requirement in state law for planning commissioners to actually be residents of the city. It is, of course, the norm, and it's left to the discretion of cities on what the requirements will be in regards to residency. And so the advisory board's handbook does provide for the planning commission that they need to be a resident unless there is what it refers to as an exception by either state law or a council-approved special requirement. And so if council actually approves a specific exception for reasonable basis, then the member of the planning commission that isn't a resident can actually be on the Morro Bay Planning Commission. So it's a policy decision by the city council, and there would need to be a special requirement to meet that exception. And that is the background, at least in regards to the law, on residency requirements for planning commission.
Great. Thank you, Chris. I just wanted for the community's benefit to have a little more detailed explanation as to the legalities associated with that. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and open up public comment for item C-1 regarding the appointment specifically of Susan Stewart to the Planning Commission. Ask AGP, do we have any public comment? Betty, I do see your hand.
Here, I'm sorry, I am unmuting her. So she.
Great. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you. As I said in my email to you, I know Ms. Stewart personally. We've both lived here over 30 years. So this is not about her. For me, it's about policy. And I couldn't be, I think, more offended, frankly, that you would seek to go outside the city to appoint someone or continue their appointment when they knowingly are no longer eligible. And that if there was not a if there was a dearth of applicants or a dearth of eligible people, that you just would find so unacceptable. And yet we have 7,500 voters in Morro Bay, and I can't believe that of those 7,500 people, there wouldn't be multitudes of people that would be not only qualified but interested and would contribute in a good way. Ms. Stewart has made her contribution, and she can continue to do that through the chamber. And I think it's an opportunity to allow others to become involved and to not do so just because the state doesn't say anything about it. The city has. And that qualification that was put into the community's handbook, the city council handbook, was made for the Harbor Board and other places like TBID where participants are who have businesses in town but don't live here can participate in the TBID, or people that were involved in the harbor and had boats in Los Osos could contribute to our harbor. But the planning commission is very specific to the city, very specific to the residents who live here. And while Ms. Stewart has a skill set, so do many other people in town. And I think it's inappropriate and sad that you would even think to overlook the rest of your constituents and appoint someone who has knowingly left town and knowingly has left this position. And so I would encourage you to allow someone else in Morro Bay to fill this position. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Appreciate that. Do we have any further public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We do not.
Okay. With that, I'll go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to council. And Mr. Neumeyer, Chris, can you just perhaps clarify the fact, I think Ms. Winholtz made the statement that that Ms. Stewart was no longer eligible. And do you have a clarification for us for that?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. So the City of Morro Bay has a 43-page advisory bodies handbook. There are some generic rules and regulations that apply to all the advisory bodies, and then each specific body has its own rules. And the Planning Commission itself specifically has a set of rules starting on page 37 of the advisory bodies handbook. On page 38 for just the Planning Commission, it does provide the exception that I referred to earlier, specifically for Planning Commission. It does, of course, say a member must be a resident and registered voter of the city during the term of appointment. And then it goes on to say, unless it's accepted by state law or council-approved special requirements. So this advisory handbook was approved specifically with this exception being available for Planning Commission specifically.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that clarification. I want to open it up to other council members if you have questions of either staff or of Chris. Please raise your hand and we'll let you ask. Seeing no hands raised. Okay. Then I will bring it back to us. And this is
Looking at the question and entertaining possibility of a motion to approve Susan Stewart to the Planning Commission for the remainder of the term ending January 31st, 2023, with the formal approval of a special requirement that her non-residency in Morro Bay will be accepted for this appointment due to unique and qualifying circumstances as outlined by our legal counsel. So, Councilmember Heller, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to move that Susan Stewart be appointed to the Planning Commission. I think with respect to comments about leaving the seat open for other people, I think, frankly, we can depend on Susan Stewart's commitment to Morro Bay, having been a resident for 30 years, having a business for 30 years. She's not only served on the Planning Commission, but she served on the General Plan Advisory Committee for a long time. There are a few people I can think of who know the city better and have volunteered their time for years to make the city a better place. And I think the Planning Commission is an extremely important commission for the city, and I think her experience is invaluable, and it's appropriate to make an exception. So that's why I have made the motion that I made. Thank you.
Thank you, and I want to recognize the fact that Councilmember Heller is the liaison to the Planning Commission, and I know attends those meetings routinely. So I really appreciate that recognition of Ms. Stewart's service to our community. So I believe that's a motion by Councilmember Heller to move the approval of Susan Stewart and the formal approval of special requirement for non-residency will be accepted for this appointment. Is there
a second?
Okay, so
I don't know if you can see my hand.
Just barely. I do see it now. Councilmember Addis, thank you.
The only thing I would add, I want to concur with Councilmember Heller and appreciate his time that he spends with the Planning Commission. I know that's a lot of time for him as well. I just also want to add that I appreciate that Susan's interested in staying on the Planning Commission because she could have moved to Los Osos and chosen many other things to do with her free time. And so to be able, be willing to finish her term with us, I think is a testament to who she is and to her character that she's willing to all but volunteer her time in this way. So I'm very supportive and would like to second the motion.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. Go ahead. Yes. Councilmember Barton, please.
I would like to concur with all the previous comments. I think it's Planning Commission is a particular animal in cities, and it's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of vision and working with not only the other commissioners but with the public. And I am so pleased that Susan is willing to continue to serve on that because it's a hard one to fill, and it's a very important in the operation of a city. So if there were a way to third it, I would. So
thank you for that. And with your experience in planning commissions previously, that's a very important statement. I thank you for making that. I'll just comment that I have known Susan Stewart since moving to this community and served with her on the chamber board in a number of capacities. And her exemplary leadership on our GPAC when that was in action and her commitment to its leadership was significant with regard to the approval of our new general plan, local coastal plan. Her experience on the Planning Commission is something that is recognized by her peers. I've received a number of calls from individuals on the Planning Commission advocating for her continued presence and leadership on this. Thanks to Councilmember Heller being the liaison. Your viewpoint is important as liaison to this body. And I do believe that legally, given the explanation by our city attorney, that we certainly are within the appropriate policy decision makers' authority to make this happen. And so given all of that, I don't believe that this is setting a precedent for something that will become the norm in the future. Again, I believe that because this is an outstanding individual
who wants to continue to serve and I believe will do so in that capacity. So with that, I also support that and will call for a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
And my thanks to Susan for continuing to want to serve. Okay, that ends item C-1. This is now item C-2. This is the one-year review of the Waterfront RV Camping Pilot Program and obtaining City Council input and recommendations on the future of the program. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our esteemed Harbor Director, Mr. Andersby. Welcome.
Hi, good evening, Mayor Heading and Council. Good to see you all back. Although saddened like everyone that we're missing an important person of our team here. So hopefully we can continue to move forward. So I'm going to share my screen here with you. Quick little presentation on staff report. So make sure I can scroll here. That's the next thing. Okay, of course, scrolling isn't working for me for some reason. All right. So we can figure this out. This always happens to me. Pardon my non-scrolling. Come on. Let's try that again. Okay, I may just do it in this format. Okay, so our purpose tonight is to review the camping program. We're about the one-year mark. As you recall, we established this back last September and looking for council input and direction on the future of the program. Unfortunately, I forgot to put the recommendations in our staff report or on my presentation here, so they'll come up later towards the end in the conclusion, but basically we're recommending to approve the program as recommended later in the report. With the Morro Creek Maritime Museum and Tidelands locations as our three sites to move forward. Of course, pending Coastal Commission approval of a coastal development permit, and consider the camp host method of management of the system in the future. Again, alternatives here. Council's prerogative always to recommend do something other than the staff recommends. So you can direct us to do otherwise, or cease the program altogether and end it. From a fiscal standpoint, our pilot revenue so far, $140,000 in gross revenues. We originally predicted about $100,000 in gross revenues, so we've exceeded those expectations, which is great. Those revenues include about $12,500 in TOT to the general fund, about $1,800 to the county and the TMD, the Tourism Marketing District tax that gets levied. And then since the writing of the staff report a week and a half ago, we've had about $13,000 additional revenues to the program. On the expense side, about $27,000 in one-time startup costs, $7,200 in ongoing operating expenses, trash, signs, other things. About $1,500 in our booking program for the website that we use to book the sites. And then the TOT and the TMD, that's an expense because we have to pay that out. $14,400 in those two taxes paid out. So the net revenues to the Harbor Fund so far are about $105,000. That's after the $15,000 offset from the low-cost accommodation fund was applied. Council approved that last year as an offset to apply some of those funds to offset some of our hard costs that we incurred when we set up the program. So if the programs continue as proposed, we're expecting about $155,000 a year in net revenue to the Harbor Fund. That's after all the expenses, and that includes $16,000 to the general fund and TOT and about $2,400 to the county and TMD. So that's about how the financial picture should look going into the future if we move forward. And we expect that to moderately increase as time goes on, but we'll just see how it goes. So as I stated earlier, the site's open for business is September 10th, 2020. We had 19 spaces, three at Coleman Park, nine at Morro Creek, and I believe we had another 7 at the Maritime Museum. February 9th, we brought an update to the council on the program, and you directed to retain Coleman, Morrow Creek, and the museum sites, modify the Coleman site to have less impact on the general public, pursue potential new sites at Morrow Rock. I believe the location was out by the outfall area and in the public parking lot immediately south of the 456 Embarcadero Hotel down towards the Tidelands end of the waterfront, which we now call the Tideland site. Don't pursue sites at the public boat launch or the pit area, which was across from Morrow Dunes RV Park over on the other side of the creek. Operate the pilot program through September so we get a full year of experience running it. Seek a necessary coastal development permit. We got an emergency coastal development permit for it last year, along with the outdoor dining along the waterfront. And so Coastal's been supportive in that regard. And then consider Campos-style management and develop a former budget. Subsequent to that February 9th council meeting, we did retain the Coleman Creek and Museum sites. We did remove one Coleman space and installed some screening between the remaining two spaces, removed the space closest to the boardwalk, and installed some screening between the remaining two spaces and the boardwalk. Early on, we put up some chain link fence with some bamboo, and then later we found some surplus panels, some wood panels sold at auction, steel and wood panels. It looked a lot better, put in a few plants, so put some screening in between. Did kind of an informal consult with the Salinan and Chumash tribes to see what their input on the rock would be. While there was a little bit of support from a couple, one of the factions of the Chumash tribes, overall they were not supportive of it, so we didn't pursue the rock site further. We established three sites, or three spaces at the Tidelands location, down by 456 in Embarcadero. We've applied to the Coastal Commission for the Coastal Development Permit to replace the Emergency Coastal Development Permit. That will be pending standard Coastal Commission processing. I suspect we'll potentially get on the on their agenda maybe September, but more likely October, based on what they've got going and their agendas these days. We developed a formal budget for the program, and that was in your budget documents that was approved for this fiscal year's budget. It's through September 30th only, which is as far as we had authorization to go through. And we began investigating the Campos system. From a budget standpoint, it's about $44,000 in this year's budget. It's through September in revenues, gross revenues, about $9,400 in expenses. Campos system, the biggest issue there is if you install such a system, you really need a site with full hookups, which we don't have. We're all dry camping, fully self-contained, so a little more work to be done there. Staff time, the average, the program has been moderate. It's certainly not been minor. It's taken a fair amount of staff time. Occupancy is averaging about 30% over all the spaces. Coleman, of course, was the most popular, then comes the creek. Although Tidelands is now stepping up there, is being real popular because it's right next to the bay, and then the Maritime Museum space is the least popular. So our experience to date, feedback from campers has been overwhelmingly positive. Gotten a lot of comments about how to improve things, but a lot of the campers appreciate the new opportunity. They like the site proximity to the beach, bay, and waterfront. They like the low-key nature of them. There's been a definite movement of self-contained, sort of overland, the overland movement that folks are wanting to be self-contained and just they need a place to stay. We've had a decent number of tent campers. We keep them at the Maritime Museum sites only. I don't have exact numbers, but there's been a fair amount of folks that have come in cars and just tent camped. Obviously not without negative impacts on the community. The Coleman site being the proximity of the boardwalk and bike path being the most impactful. Impacts on public access and parking. And as I think you're aware, there's a citizens initiative currently being circulated for signatures to stop the program. You received an email on that today. Well, I can't say I completely disagree with the 4 points that the folks pursuing that raise. The question really is, do they rise to the level of shutting down the program? Are they not mitigatable? So I think that's really what the question is going to be. So we're recommending the program be made permanent as follows. Retain Morrow Creek, Maritime Museum, and Tideland sites. Permanently cease operations at Coleman. We stopped taking reservations there at the end of July. Do not establish the previously approved Morrock site, as we didn't pursue it after I got the native input from those folks. Establish the daily fees in the master fee schedule, $65 for Creek and Museum and $75 for Tidelands. Those numbers are both above what you'll find on the private sector or in state parks for dry campgrounds with no hookups. So we're not directly competing or undercutting those folks. And continue to investigate camp host style of management. Again, the biggest question there is, where do you find a place with hookups, a location that can blend in and be minimally impactful? And then the duties. You know, what other duties can they do besides manage the checking in and checking out of campers and monitoring the sites? And you could look at other public benefits, such as running the beach wheelchair program, which is becoming very popular and impactful on our department because we're dealing with that now. Maybe some trash pickup and maybe some restroom, public restroom monitoring and reporting. So potential bringing some other public benefit out of a camp host system. But I think it's still a work in progress. So in conclusion, the program's proven financially viable. The revenue predictions have largely held true, even though our occupancy is a little lower than we expected. I think our initial expectations were 50%. We're at 30, but revenue's still up. So maybe we didn't do our math right in the beginning, but we seem to be financially on the right side of the equation. No excessive new problems or impacts on staff. You know, as you've seen, there's a lot of folks out RVing now, and whether or not we had RV spaces there in town, and so that we've got a place for them to stay instead of sleeping, you know, poaching spaces out in the rock or on streets, we think we've given an alternative that's helped that. And the camp host style management needs a little further research to really vet out how that would work. So we would bring that back to council if council chooses to continue moving forward. So the 155 in long term, we think we'll make in 1,000 in net annual revenues. I think it's an important piece of the financial puzzle. It's certainly not peanuts. It's not solving the harbor department's financial needs, but it appears to definitely be a source of funds for multiple things, including maybe some other public improvements in the area that we're doing the RV in. And, you know, our department still has a critical backlog of capital needs, capital replacement, maintenance, equipment. You know, our current projections, we constantly revise our schedules for that. And if you took everything that needed to be done now and everything that should be done on a schedule of replacement, we have a need of about $700,000 a year for the next 10 years. If we were to do everything as it should be done on schedule, of course, we never have. We do things on more of a as needed basis, but if we got on a perfect schedule, that's about what it would be. And those needs have ramifications on public access and public safety because they fund all the things we do. So that's about my presentation. I'm just going to leave you with the picture here that, you know, this is it. This is it every day now out here. It seems like on weekends and there's campers out there and day using and they need a place to stay at night. The RV parks are full. Morro Bay is definitely on a lot of maps and so far the program is proven pretty valuable from a financial standpoint, providing some other opportunities for folks. So that, I'll stop talking.
Hey, Eric, thank you for the comprehensive overview and review of the program. We appreciate that greatly. With that, I'm going to open it up to council member questions at this time. I see council member Addis's hand was raised first, and council member Heller. Councilmember Addis, please.
I think mine was left up, but I do have a question. Is there a way to know how much the Tidelands spaces are bringing in compared to the spaces over by the bridge? Like, or even if not a dollar amount, a general percentage? Where most of the revenue is coming from?
Well, I think we were getting. The last analysis I had my staff do on overall, I think Coleman, before we did Tidelands, I think Coleman was generating about 25 or 30% of the overall revenues. We've stopped reservations at Coleman, largely been replaced by Tidelands. It's been pretty popular, and especially on the weekends, those are the first places that fill. So my feeling would be it's probably about the same. We're probably going to be in about the 25, 30% range. Tidelands from an overall revenue standpoint, because they're $10 more, but there's only three spaces.
And then you mentioned possible other ways to ameliorate the impact on folks who are feeling like this program just doesn't fit. Do you know now what kinds of things, or is that something that you would need to research further to make adjustments?
Well, Como is obviously the most impactful because it was right there up front in your face. And Morro Creek's largely off to the side, out of the way. It's not really blocking anybody's view sheds anywhere. Maritime Museum, the same. It's just, it blends in with everything else happening back inside of there or the museum. Tidelands, not really blocking anybody's view sheds. It's a little more up front, but that's a less used portion of the waterfront. We've taken the screening down at Coleman, and what we're going to do if we continue forward is install that, those wood panels, probably starting at Tidelands first, because they're the kind of the most upfront spaces, and then distribute them down into other spaces. We don't have a lot of them, or maybe we'll have to build some more, but, just a little more screening and maybe some planting, potted plants, just to soften things up a little bit, I think is the main thing we can do. I mean, the Tidelands is across the street, from the waterfront and from the sidewalk along there. There's really that parking lot gets used by, it's kind of an overflow lot. I think the hotel there largely takes care of all its own customers. I don't think any of the customers flow outside of there. So maybe on really crowded days, people end up down there, and then they're walking back north to get to the main part of the waterfront. Some will use that lot for Tidelands Park, but I think Tidelands Park lot proper and the one down the launch ramp largely takes care of those folks. So it's mostly parking customers that are, folks that are using that lot for whatever reason that are mostly impacted. Everybody else is a little further across the street over there.
And then outside of the possible initiative, are you still hearing the same level of feedback on the program overall, or has the feedback shifted? Or if we took out the feedback around Coleman, would you say there's still an abundance of feedback?
From a feedback standpoint, I received a fair amount of feedback from folks appreciative. I think you got some in official public comment from Sean Green. I had similar from some of the other most vocal folks that were against the program, and especially Coleman, saying thank you very much. We think we can support it now. Or at least not oppose it. So I think Coleman was the biggest factor, and I think the communities appreciated that.
That's all for me, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. Councilmember Heller, I see your hand, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Eric, I just have to say hats off to you for all the work that you've done with city staff and with Coastal Commission to get the emergency permit and get this program up and running on a shoestring in the context of everything else that you have on your plate with respect to running our harbor. It's pretty remarkable. You've done an amazing job, I think. I think what you did at the Coleman site when there were complaints was an immediate response with different kinds of barriers for the chain link fence, if I remember correctly, and then wood fence and then planting. And you guys have really scrambled to do as best you can with a challenging job, and my hat goes off to you for that, regardless of what happens with this particular item tonight. The questions that I have to come to mind is, I know the Coleman site, I think at a previous meeting you said that the Coleman site was the most popular and generated the most revenue. Could you remind me about what that percentage was of the total revenue that Coleman generated?
Well, I think roughly about 25-30% of the total revenue overall of the program.
Oh, okay. I thought it was more than that.
A blend of when it was three sites and then the two sites, because three to February, so it'd be hard to tease it out now.
Okay. And then your projected figures, do they include, or rather have you taken out the revenue that the Coleman sites would have generated
with
regard to your projection?
Yeah, we took out Coleman. We've replaced three sites for three sites. When we did our projections, we figured Coleman was, or Tidelands was probably going to be a little bit less, because, I mean, Coleman, from a camper's perspective, I mean, it doesn't get much better. But it's pretty good down at Tidelands. It's actually a lot quieter down there from a traffic and other standpoint, and you've got a beautiful view right there across the street. So we're projecting a little less at Tidelands, but not a huge amount less.
How much do you get for the Tidelands spaces?
75.
75, okay.
Yeah.
And then in terms of staff time, I'm having a hard time getting my arms around what the true cost is. When you put together your numbers, did you take out a specific, did you guesstimate the hours? It might be difficult to track that, but did you take that out of your cost to come to your net figure?
No, I've not pulled that. I mean, that's a different, it's a different way of accounting. That's a cost allocation way of accounting. You know, we're here, you know, Harbor Patrol, you know, we're here for X amount of hours per day, whether we're working right on A, B, C, or D.
Right.
This is just an added duty to that. So if you look at it from that standpoint, it's not costing us anymore. It's just we're having to spend more time on this. I mean, if we move forward, you know, whether we can come up with a camp host system, you know, as you may remember, we are one full-time position down, administrative position down when Sherry left, you know, and Charlie moved up to rec, and we went through all that, and then COVID hit, and we didn't ever refill that position. So it is a challenge for us to maintain this on a long-term basis. We're doing it now because we're running the pilot, and we want to prove that it works financially.
Yeah.
Hopefully in the future, now that, you know, revenues are looking better and Measure E and the budget and everything else, we've got a little room, and we can start addressing the structure of this department. Different discussion, but it's definitely, there's an impact and there's a cost to it. I thought I wrote my staff report, how much time we put into it. It's, you know, a couple hours per day for patrol, basically.
Yeah, that didn't seem like too much to me, but when you're talking about it a few minutes ago, it sounded like it was more than that.
Well, it really varies a lot, and a lot of it depends on, you know, if you can just stick to the duty of going in the morning, you know, at 11 at checkout time, make sure everybody's out, you know, clear any problems that there are, and then you swing back around, you know, 3-4 after people have come in, you check them in. You know, they self-check themselves in. They go find the place. They just kind of wait for us to show up. If you can minimize the talking time, because the RV folks love to talk and they love to engage and tell you about what they're doing, that can eat up a lot of time if you let it. So
if you need a 3-minute timer, I don't know.
Yeah, just the strict act of doing what you need to do is relatively short term, but if you get pulled into other stuff, then that can take longer. So
okay.
And there's administrative, you know, there's the back end, you know, people cancel reservations and we've got to process refunds and Lori, you know, she processes all the money part, you know, and sends everything up to finance and does all that. And, you know, and I will say, you know, our staff, you know, my staff, the kudos really go to them because they're the ones that have put it together. I get all the credit, but I always joke, you know, they're the ones that make all my crazy dreams come true. So it's really my staff that has made it happen.
That's good. You do have a good staff. So if we take the Coleman sites out of the equation, if my math is correct, you'll have 19 sites left. Is that correct?
Yeah, we'll be back to 19, yeah.
19, okay.
Took the one Coleman out, that brought us down to 18. And then I think we added the Tideland sites before we pulled Coleman off, but then we've stopped taking reservations at Coleman, so we're back to 19.
Okay. So the duties that you described for a possible camp host included collecting money from the washing machines, possibly cleaning restrooms and so forth. Are those all things that your staff does now?
No. As you know, we as a city have had a challenge keeping up with restroom cleaning on the waterfront in general.
Right.
I think, I don't know that a camp host would be the best fit for doing the cleaning, but at least for maintaining or monitoring and maybe stocking and helping with the restroom situation. But, you know, it's 19 spaces. It's not a ton of spaces. It wouldn't take, you know, it's not a full-time job as a camp host. So I think there's some other things we could look at having them do.
So is your idea that the camp host would be have a space for free in exchange for management services, or would they pay a reduced rate, or what are your thoughts about that?
No, the camp host systems typically, whether they're state, federal, you know, Port St. Louis, the norm is they get a free spot for in exchange for, you know, they get a place to live basically in exchange for doing the duties. You give them supplies and they do whatever you have them do. And so it's in exchange for that. And this is actually it's sort of an industry. There's folks out there that sort of do that for a living. They travel from state to state, place to place, managing campsites.
Well, you know, if you had full hookups, I might consider it when my term on the council is over.
Yeah.
It sounds like a pretty good gig, frankly. So if we were to provide a place with full hookups, do you have any ideas where that might be?
Well, that's the challenge. You know, we need somewhere that we've got somewhere we can get to sewer relatively easily. Ideally it would be, you know, probably at the out at the creek site, in that you've already got RVs going out there. So I'd like to see it in one of our existing sites. It's just the challenge is the cost of getting the utilities to that site, sewer being one of them. But, you know, electrical, because they have electrical hookups and water hookups as well. It can't be going back and forth, you know, unhooking and because they use a lot more power and water.
Okay. Are there any other locations in the city where you think it might be appropriate to have some motorhomes overnight? I mean, they're definitely here. Any thoughts about that? Any other locations?
We've looked around. I mean, I think we've picked the low-hanging fruit. You know, my staff and I have looked around and kind of eyeballed, and they all are either taking up more public parking or closer to businesses. There's, you know, the ones we have, you know, and outside the Rock, you know, big open space, which isn't going to work. There's not a lot left on the waterfront. There's just not a lot of empty space that's ours that we could potentially move into.
Okay, and then my last question has to do with the Rock parking lot. In talking with the Saldan and Chumash representatives, you were talking about close to the Rock, I imagine, and I'm wondering if possible parking at the other end of the parking lot away from the Rock near the restrooms might be a possibility for them.
I had that conversation with a couple of the reps. I couldn't tell you whether it was the Slinen or Chumash, but in general, their sentiment was in opposition anywhere out at the Rock, even though the Rock is their sacred grounds, and the Rock parking lot itself is fill. It's not, you know, as you know, the Rock used to be an island out there, but they didn't diss the proximity to the Rock at all. So, you know, pretty much anywhere from, you know, Coleman beyond, which really encompasses the whole Rock parking lot, they didn't agree to. They didn't think that was going to be good, and it was, you know, disrespectful to their sacred site. So,
Okay, those are my questions. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Eric.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Councilmember Barton, did you have any questions?
No questions, but thank you for having all the work that you've done to bring this program to fruition. I think it's very intriguing what you've managed to squeeze out of, you know, what was originally just, it was an idea, and now we see the finished product. I'm also intrigued with the picture that you showed at the end of the new reality of what it looks like. Here you mentioned the beach and the parking lot, but the thing that caught my eye was the access road, completely full in both directions. And so just the amount of movement of people coming in and out of Morro Bay is, you know, it's very different than it was a few years ago. So this has been a good program to be able to try and both accommodate people, but also to accommodate the needs that you have in your department in managing the harbor. So hats off to you for all the work that's gone into it, to you and your staff.
Great. And I see your hand, Councilmember Addis.
I do have one more question, Eric. For those that might not be familiar with how we got here, can you talk just a little bit about the harbor budget and the deficits and what the camping program is doing to support that long term, and what we would do if we didn't have the camping program financially?
So thank you, Member Councilman Rada. So, you know, for a number of years now, we've been facing, you know, starting with the 2008 recession and, you know, up and down and COVID and some other things, you know, the power plant shutting down, the outfall lease, losing that revenue. We've been on the ragged edge of a balanced budget, a couple of years of deficit, but there's always been this capital shortfall in taking care of our capital needs, our big, you know, slips, piers, boats, harbor patrol boats, the big ticket items. And so we've been kind of upside down in funding that program, and starting several years ago, I'll probably go back 3 or 4, maybe 5 years ago, the Harbor Advisory Board started getting into, as part of the City Council's goal setting process, helping identify potential new revenue sources, and they've vetted a bunch of different things, and this one came to them a couple of different times, and they've supported it as a pilot program, and it obviously went on to the council. And so, you know, like I said, a net revenues of $150,000 out of a $2 million budget, you know, it's not, like I said, stated earlier, it doesn't save our budget, but I think, as Councilmember Barton said a second ago, you know, we've got all these people coming, and they're not all necessarily spending money down on the waterfront in the restaurants or in the shops buying stuff, but they're having impacts. They need to be saved. They're on the beach. They're kayaking and getting in trouble, or they're using our facilities. They're flushing our toilets. They're all having impacts, and not necessarily, you know, putting money into the program. And so this is a way of recouping some of the cost from some of those visitors, and providing a new opportunity for visitors. And so it becomes a piece of the puzzle. It appears to be prove itself financially viable and worthwhile. If it was five figures, you know, or low six, you know, really low six figures, I may not be worth it, but it appears that it's viable, and we think it'll continue to grow. And potentially if we keep it and improve our spaces a little more, put some little dividers between, make them a, you know, some of the people really like just being out in the blank, nothing, no, except for a picnic table. But get a few more improvements, maybe I'll up at another $10, which would increase the revenues overall. So I think it becomes an important piece of the puzzle for us to start solving our capital program.
Thank you. That was my only other question.
Bet. No worries. Thank you again, Eric. Thanks for those questions. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public comment. This is public comment for item C-2 on the agenda. And I'll ask if, AGP, if we have any public comment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We do not have any public comment at this time.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. Betty Winholtz just raised her hand as soon as finished saying that. She is. Betty Winholtz, you are now unmuted.
Welcome, Betty.
Thank you. What I will do is just read my letter, because I think it speaks for itself and for the residents of Morro Bay. I am one of the initiative proponents who want the voters of Morro Bay to decide whether or not there should be camping in the parking lots along the Embarcadero. I appreciate that staff report proposal scaled down to 3 of the parking lots, and yet the concerns that we have not gone away because of that. And this was all articulated back in February when 98 out of 100 comments to you said we do not want this as part of our city. This was not part of our quality of life issues, and yet you chose to vote the opposite. And these 4 things cannot be mitigated without doing away with the camping sites. And the 4 items are protecting of the natural beauty, the sensitivity, intrinsic value of the bay and the rock, preventing the visual and physical degradation of public places by private housekeeping in parking lots, by avoiding competition with local private RV businesses as well as state parks, and the preservation of day use parking, which I think we know parking is at a premium, and to use up camping spots instead of day use speaks actually to Ms. Barton's concern or observation about how many people there are here. Of course, out-of-town campers like the situation because they're getting a great price for overlooking the bay. However, local residents who camp have told me they wouldn't do it for the reasons that I just articulated. I've had Cayucas residents over and over again ask if they could sign the petition because they come here, they walk, they go down to Tidelands, they go out to the Harbor Walk, and they do not appreciate having to walk by people camping, you know, within 10 feet. And I will observe that when you put up the barriers at Coleman, the people there, because you then took away part of their view, they would go and sit around the other side of the barriers and be within 3 or 4 feet of the bicycle lane. And if those barriers end up going down at Tidelands, my guess is that will happen again, and they'll just sit out front and be almost on the street. It is well known that the city has other projects underway to create additional revenue for the Harbor Department. Parking meters are one of those, and we see that as perhaps being even more of a moneymaker than this one is, and that you really don't have to have both. And we're wondering if you're looking at that and if you've compared the possible prices for that. So as a representative of the other proponents of the initiative, and I believe I speak for a good portion of the city of Morro Bay, that we ask you to vote with your constituents and not put this program on a permanent basis.
Thank you, Betty. AGP, do we have other public comment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have no other public comments at this time.
Okay, I will go ahead and close public comment on this item, bring it back to council, and Councilmember Addis, would you like to start us off?
I would, and I want to appreciate the comments that were made in terms of being sensitive to what the community has asked for, and I want to appreciate staff for being very transparent about the feedback that's been received, for understanding the need to let go of Coleman Beach. And I want to appeal to my colleagues here on council that we take a middle ground and that we approve the project again temporarily for another year, so that staff does have time to look at how to address some of the concerns. I tend to agree with what Eric said, that rather than throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I think we can find a solution. And most importantly, I'm incredibly concerned about the funding for the Harbor Department. I'm now the liaison to HAB, and I've heard the numerous discussions and seen how hard the volunteers on HAB are working. The Friends of the Harbor are working. The city staff is working to find funding for our harbor. And I tend to think that every single dollar does matter right now. I don't think we can unfund one program on the hopes that we'll put another program in place. I think that we need a bridge. So my suggestion would be that we approve this for another year. And if we continue to get negative feedback, if people start speaking up about other areas of the program and we're just not able to address that, that we can come back to the table on this. And maybe we have a check-in in 6 months or so just to hear how things are going. Personally, the feedback that I have gotten has really calmed down. Most of what I was hearing, 90% of what I was hearing, was about Coleman Beach, and I really haven't had a lot of contact, so I do feel like I'm representing my constituents and the residents of Morro Bay who have asked us to get rid of Coleman. We've done that, and since then I haven't heard a lot of negative feedback. I also feel that the program does provide important overflow for the RV camping. I don't think it takes away business. I think it actually is additive when we think about the RV program. So I would move that we approve this for another year temporarily with, say, a six-month check-in.
I'd like to second that.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Addis to move forward with the revised waterfront RV camping program as presented by staff, to approve it for only 1 year, not permanently, and to ask for staff to bring back a review in 6 months. If I captured that correctly, I see your head. Did I get everything?
And I guess I should add at that 6 month review, of course, with financial information.
Right. A complete review in 6 months. And then, Councilmember Barton, did you second that as I stated it?
Yes.
Okay. So we do have a motion by Councilmember Addis, as stated, and second by Councilmember Barton, and I see Councilmember Heller. I see your hand, sir. Please.
Okay, now I'm unmuted. So far, I'm doing good. Okay. Councilmember Addis, I appreciate your comments. Obviously, it's a sensitive issue to the community. Frankly, I think if the harbor department were in a strong financial position, we would not be allowing parking anywhere in the city. It's not something that we all just really want to think is a great idea. The only reason we ever supported it, it was in the middle of a pandemic with a harbor department that is financially running on fumes. And until the financial condition of the harbor department improves significantly, this is an important program. I don't feel the need to review it right away. I would love to review it when we have another source of funding for this department, whether that's through parking, paid parking, or an assessment district, some source of realistic, sustainable funding that will generate $500,000 to $700,000 a year for their capital needs, to say nothing of their operational needs. I take the constituents' concerns about the impact of looking at RVs throughout the city very seriously. I don't like looking at them. I would rather they stayed in the parks. I don't like them at the parking lot. But unless someone else comes up with a better idea on how to raise money for this department, I will support the program. I think taking Coleman out of the equation is a very good idea, and I too agree with you, Council Member Addis. Most of the complaints I got were about the Coleman sites, which obviously were great sites, very popular, but you know, pulling them out I think is a really positive recommendation. So I don't know if you would accept a friendly amendment or not, but I would like to continue the program as proposed until we have financing in place that allows to cut it back or delete it completely. I don't know if you'd accept that or not.
So we do have a motion and a second, and perhaps the way I'll take it, Councilmember Heller, is vote on the motion as is, and
okay.
If that dies, then come back with a revised.
I knew I was doing something wrong.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to you know, formulate.
Can I interject, Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor.
Yes, you certainly
can. I actually, if we're allowed to, I don't mind a friendly amendment to this. I don't mind not doing a check-in. I did want to hear from all four of us, because really what I'm looking for with this motion is consensus. And so, if that means taking out the 6 months check-in, I can live with that. But I kind of wanted to hear from all four of us besides, before saying yes, no.
Yes, and I'll give you my opinion here. But not only did you want a 6 month check-in, but you wanted approval just for 1 year, not permanent.
Correct. I'm asking. If Councilmember Heller could live with letting go of the check-in, but doing this temporarily for a year, I think that would be a good compromise.
Well, I'll go ahead and offer my opinion, and then we can go ahead and make a vote or take a vote based upon the comments that have been made. And thanks, everybody, for great comments and a great discussion. I appreciate staff. Eric, I know you have been trying for years to look at alternative revenue sources to fund capital improvements on the harbor, which to date literally do not exist. Those funds do not exist. And on numerous occasions, we have outlined as long ago as 4 or 5 years ago, when we made the financial sustainability of one of our major initiative for the city, the Harbor Department being one of those suffering tremendously as an enterprise fund from lack of a viable future due to lack of capital funds. So, I don't particularly like the RV camping program as a preference if I had to rate ways that I might go after revenue. However, I do think it provides a significant amount of money for the Harbor Department to begin to improve what have been identified as significant capital needs on the Embarcadero. And I'll remind us that staff will be bringing back a capital needs study, a recommendation to us for an external consultant to look at all the capital needs for the city. And I think it's going to open our eyes even further with regard to the Harbor Enterprise Fund. I've commented before that we're not going to sustain the Harbor Fund capital improvement with leaseholder increases. It's just, you could double the amount of money we're charging our leaseholders down there, and it would not sustain the capital funding that's necessary here. So I'm also, you know, a bit torn. I thank you for removing Coleman Park. That's the number one complaint that I heard. I've heard few to no complaints that I've received recently with regard to the revised recommendation. Not received a lot of input on your staff report, but do also understand the concerns of our constituents in the city with regard to the visual impact issues, competition with other RV entities, which I personally don't think is a problem, and preservation of day use parking, which again, I think the impacts of this program are minimal. I will work feverishly with the rest of you to identify alternatives to this, to sustain the Harbor Fund. Personally, I'll speak it again that it's a priority for me. And I thank you, Councilmember Addis, for your leadership on the HAB. And I'll remind folks that this comes directly as a recommendation from the Harbor Advisory Board for one of the major new revenue sources, at least at present, for the Harbor Capital Fund. And so with that, I would be very happy to go along with the proposed motion. And I would support the amendment, friendly amendment, to remove the six-month check-in. However, I'm not at a point where I'm ready to approve it into perpetuity, so to speak. I do like the one-year limitation, and if we could keep that in the amendment, I would support that. So those are my comments, and I'll turn back to you, Councilmember Addis. You are the motion maker. Would you like to offer a friendly amendment?
Jeff, would it help? if I accepted your friendly amendment, would it
help? She's looking for a unanimous vote, sir.
I really am, and partially because I think it speaks to the work of our HAB. I think a unanimous vote would really show our HAB how important their voice is, and I would just love to have all four of us working together, rowing in the same direction on this. And so would be very much willing to give up the check-in in exchange for the year-long, and totally understand if that's not what's on your plate right now.
Well, I appreciate your comments there. Now I'm really conflicted. I guess behind my friendly amendment, if we want the community to get the message of the financial condition of the Harbor Department and my concern about the six-month check-in and even the year check-in is just this continual dragging out this discussion about whether or not we want RV parking or not. It's an irrelevant issue. We need every penny that we can get, and we need a lot more. And I think by saying this is going to continue until we have identified other funding sources and we can discontinue it, that's the message we need to give to the city. So I appreciate your effort to all be rowing together. I'm not sure that I'll support it without that condition, because I believe that the community, I'm not sure, is getting the message. I don't know. But I don't know how I'm going to vote. Right now, saying that, I don't know how I'm going to vote.
Well, if Council Member Barton, who seconded the motion, if we can take the friendly amendment, I'd love to call the vote.
Could I offer a suggestion?
Of course.
Okay. So perhaps one option would be to, the middle ground would be, you know, within 1 year or when another revenue source is identified, whichever comes first, you know, that we would have that discussion. So maybe you could still have that message be out there, Councilmember Heller, that this is entirely, a lot of ways, driven by the need to find revenue to pay for the waterfront, but also acknowledge that we want to make sure we're comporting with our community. So that might be a middle ground to consider.
Councilmember Addis, what do you think?
I can live with that. Okay. As long as we keep that year check-in, I can live with that.
Okay. Mr. Collins, I like that suggestion very much. Now, Mayor, what do I do?
You do nothing. I'm turning to Councilmember Addis and asking her to if she'll revise her motion, and then I'll ask the seconder, Councilmember Barton, if she concurs.
So I will revise the motion. I will move to approve the program for 1 year or a minimum, maximum of 1 year, unless another revenue source is identified before then. I think that's how it goes.
Is that Councilmember Heller? I'm just looking.
I was looking for Councilmember Barton.
Councilmember Barton, is that a second by you?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And Councilmember Heller, I'm just looking.
I'm good. That sounds fine.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I can support that as well. And unless there's any other discussion, I will ask for a roll call vote on that.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
And thank you, Council, for excellent dialogue, discussion, and debate. That's good government in action, in my opinion. So thanks for that. And Eric, thank you again. Thank your staff for all that they're doing. We're trying to get you as many bucks as we can, sir. We'll continue to work with you.
Appreciate it.
That brings us to item C-3. This is approval of amendment number 3 to the consultant agreement for implementation of the first phase of the Morro Bay One Water Plan, both water and wastewater, and authorization for the city manager to sign the agreement. That I am going to turn this over to Mr. Leibick, our city engineer, sir.
Well, actually, I will be presenting this
Greg
presentation on behalf of the Public Works Department.
Our Public Works Director, I'm turning it over to him. Hi, Greg.
Thank you. How are you all? Let me just get this presentation up. Can you all see that?
No.
Okay. Let's try again.
We see your handsome face, but we see nothing else.
Well, that's important. Okay, let's see. How about now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And still.
And still.
Okay, very good. So I'm pleased to present this report on behalf of the department. This is to request an approval of Amendment 3 to the consultant agreement with Canon for implementation of the city's first phase of the One Water Plan. So I'll go through some quick background about the One Water Plan. It was approved by City Council just under 3 years ago November 13th, 2018, and it was designed to prioritize capital and maintenance improvements for the city's wastewater, water, and stormwater systems. And One Water identified four projects as being part of the first phase of implementation. Two of those were wastewater, and two were water delivery system improvement projects. So the first one is the Main Street and Atascadero sewer line improvements. There's also the Beachcomber sewer line improvements. And we can talk about these if there's questions about them. Also, the Nutmeg Pressure Zone improvements, as well as the water tank rehabilitation for water delivery. So to begin implementation of these four projects, the city entered into an agreement with Canon, and that was for $815,237 to perform the design, environmental, and permitting services work. And the city manager had 10% leeway to authorize about $80,000 more for a total authorization of $896,761. So there already have been two previous contract amendments to Canon's contract. The first one was to add the water tank rehabilitation project, and that was for $56,848, approved by the city manager, and also surface improvements at Beachcomber. That was the second amendment, and that was for $19,250. Both of those were approved by the city manager within his authorization. So I will turn to Amendment 3, which is the subject of this council item. So there are three components to Amendment 3. I'll go through each of those. The first component is we'd like Hannon to perform an alternative analysis of the Nutmeg pressure zone at not to exceed $30,000. So this would allow us to combine the Nutmeg and Elena pressure zones. And what that would do would be to eliminate the Elena storage tank. This is pretty big because some of you may have seen that the tanks on Elena are not in great shape, and they're beyond the point of being refurbished. They would need to be fully replaced to the tune of $1 million. They are not very large tanks, so they don't really offer the city a lot of capacity. So if it's not a very good deal to pursue that project. So eliminating that piece of the project could potentially save the city around $1 million in capital costs. It would also eliminate a booster station on 195 of Vachon, if anyone has been out there. That is essentially a water pump in someone's front yard. It's pretty unsightly. It's loud. It's really settled into a residential neighborhood. So I'm sure the residents of Vachon would appreciate that. And again, we expect this component of Amendment 3 to lower the capital costs of this project. As well, the second component is actual design improvements that Canon would do for us that result from this alternative analysis at not to exceed of $40,000. So that would include land surveying, design of a pressure reducing station, and also recommendations to repair the storm drain, which is also the Nutmeg tank drain line. If any of you have been up there, that drain line is in pretty bad shape, and it serves as the drain line for the tank. So if there was ever a need to drain that tank, it would be going down some pipes that are in bad shape. So that's something that we would want to see done and prioritized. And then the third component of Amendment 3 is the concurrent construction of the replacement of the Atascadero Road sewer main line and the construction of the conveyance pipeline from the new Atascadero Road pump station to the water reclamation facility at not to exceed $30,000. That's a bit of a mouthful, so there are some images I'm going to show after this slide. But overall, we expect this to reduce project timelines and disruptions along the Atascadero Road by about a year. And it would also, in that way, minimize the traffic impacts that we have on Atascadero Road. So just like to walk through what this third component of Amendment 3 looks like. So currently, we are in the construction phase of the new pump station on Atascadero Road, right by the city's courtyard. And then you can see there the blue line signifies where the conveyance line will be running to the water treatment facility. So that obviously has not all been completed yet. And I'm not sure if you can see my cursor, but I hope you can. This is Atascadero Road here. So this street will be partially opened up to construct that conveyance line. And just to overlay with this one water project for Main Street and Atascadero Road sewer line improvements, you can see that it's essentially going down the same strip of Atascadero Road. It does go a bit farther and goes up Main Street. And so what our proposal was and what we'd like to request from Canon is to actually split that project up, that one water project, up into two segments. We can handle the Atascadero Road segment concurrently with the conveyance system installation, and then handle the Main Street segment at a later date. And again, this would move this segment of the, let me step back. For the conveyance line, we expect construction to begin in winter of this year. And if we go this route, if Amendment 3 is approved, then we could start performing the construction of the Atascadero Road segment right after that, instead of closing up the street, waiting a year, and then opening it up again. So I'll give a brief discussion here about the fiscal impact. There are funds available. There are sufficient funds available in the water and sewer funds to accommodate this amendment. It would require a transfer from the water and sewer capital funds as well as the water and sewer revenue funds. The contract increase will require a project budget increase of $119,250. That includes amendments 2 and 3 together. And staff would move up the proposed expenditures from fiscal year 2022-23 to fiscal year 2021-22, again, to accommodate that expedited timeline. And we, as I stated earlier, do expect that approval of Amendment 3 would reduce capital costs by approximately $1 million. I'd also like to add, it's not included in this presentation, I don't think it was in the report, but the original design work for these projects cumulatively was expected to be somewhere around $1.5 million. And this request tonight would bring the total contract with Canon up to about $991,000. So that's almost just over $500,000 less than was originally anticipated for the design work for these projects. And that's in addition to the $1 million savings for not having to install the Elena tank. Again, it's too early to do a victory lap on any of that. A lot can happen. That is the fiscal impact that we expect. So finally, our recommendation is to approve and authorize the city manager to execute a time and materials amendment to the consultant agreement with Canon Corporation for additional engineering services necessary to complete and implement the first phase of the One Water Plan projects in an amount not to exceed $100,000 without prior written authorization. This will result in a total contract authorization of $991,335. And 2, direct staff to return to council during quarterly budget review with budget amendments necessary to accommodate additional design scope and to advance these projects in fiscal year 2021-22 rather than in fiscal year 2022-23. And that concludes my presentation.
Great. Thank you. Excellent presentation. I really appreciate that, as well as the staff report, very clear and concise. Let's start with council questions. My first question to you is, what is the impact to the city should the council not approve this amendment this evening?
I appreciate your question, Mayor. The most obvious impact would be that we would have to delay completing work along the Tascadero Road because we would have two separate projects there, and our residents would have to live through an additional year of traffic and work being done on the Tascadero Road. But also, the city has an opportunity with this amendment to save in capital costs of approximately $1 million. And so if this amendment was not approved, then we would not be able to pursue that. And again, that becomes a more complicated project. We like the idea of replacing the Nutmeg tank, which is in the One Water Plan, and making it big enough to also have the capacity to include what would have been in the Elena tank replacement. And so, again, if this recommendation was not approved, if this amendment was not approved, then we would not be able to do that.
Are you satisfied with the performance of Canon and Associates?
Being very new to the city, I have not had the opportunity to work with them too much, so I would prefer to take that question to Rob, who's been working very closely with them on this. Rob, are you there?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, we're Canon has been able to meet even through the pandemic. They've continued to work and meet our timelines, be very responsive to changes to the project. They've met with our utility staff, worked with them in coming up with the best solutions from an operational standpoint, in addition to not only taking in what us engineers want to do.
Right. And this currently is not budgeted, so you'll be coming back with a budget amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And to anticipate that. And my last question is, do you at this time anticipate the need to come back with any other significant increases to scope of this service contract for the current One Water projects?
Thank you, Mayor, for the question. Again, since Rob is the engineer, the city engineer, and has been working with this consultant closely, I'll pass that question along to him.
Not for the scope envisioned as modified. We will need to, once we permit the Nutmeg tank, we will need to move to final design. That is not within Canon's scope, and we would either request a contract amendment with them, or we left our options open to go up for RFP and seek another firm's assistance to do the final plans for construction plans for the Nutmeg tank and then the ancillary pressure zone improvements.
Great. Now, I'm sorry, I did have one other question. I know it's in your staff report, but if you could just reaffirm the fact that the question is, will this have an impact to our ratepayers in terms of the need for a rate increase for either water or sewer enterprise funds?
No. Cost estimates were factored into the rate analysis based on the One Water plan. So they did, Bartlewells did use the higher dollar amount for the soft costs in their analysis of rates.
Great. Thank you. I have no further questions. I'll look for any council hands that, if there are other questions. Councilmember Heller, sir. Yes.
Okay, I think I got everything pushed right here. Okay. Mr. Kwalik, thank you so much for your presentation and welcome aboard. Very, very clear description of the work. So if I understand it correctly, the two wastewater projects, this amendment will fund the design work all the way through the completion of the projects?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and then the other two projects that are referenced in the staff resort report is the Nutmeg pressure zone improvements and the water tank rehabilitation, which, if I understand it correctly, still needs to have the final design completed based on what we haven't contracted at the moment anyway. Is that true?
That's correct, and that's something that we would put out an RFP for.
Okay.
Just a little bit of clarification on that. The tank rehab job, we had done the preliminary work on that with the tank inspections, and we're planning on doing that as an in-house project, but we lost one of our assistant engineers that was going to take that project on. So that was, I believe, Amendment 1 to the Canon contract to prepare those that PS&E, the plan specifications and estimates. So we're I need to make one minor change to that bid package, and we'll be going out to bid with that project here likely tomorrow.
Okay, so would you expect with the two projects where there's still some final design work to be done, you expect ultimately for all of that to come in under the budget that we have in the One Water?
Yes, I believe we Corolla prepared a fairly conservative budget amounts for these One Water projects, looking at them being out several years. So they use the appropriate level of conservatism in their estimates.
Okay. In looking at how these professional service contracts are procured, I see a lot of not to exceed numbers. Is this how the city typically buys professional services, is on a not to exceed amount?
Typically in the past, professional engineering services, architectural services, and other professional services are based in California on the Mini Brooks Act, so it's qualifications-based selection. So we select the most qualified design or engineering architecture firm and then negotiate a final fee. That fee can take a couple of different methods. It could be a time and materials not to exceed It could be just a time and materials with no cap on it, or a fixed fee contract. My experience with fixed fee contracts is they can be very profitable for a consulting engineer. Because they may assume the worst and be able to garner high profits if it comes in under budget. Also, my experience is on fixed fee contracts is you're typically have many more arguments over scope of work. Because there is a fixed lump sum fee for that work. So here at Morro Bay and previously when I was at the City of San Luis Obispo, our typical engineering, civil engineering contracts were time and materials not to exceed.
Okay, those are my questions. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Greg and Rob.
Great. Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Other looking for other hands if you have questions. Seeing no. Oh, Councilmember Addis. Okay, yes, please.
This one, what's the timeline if this moves forward in terms of actually getting the tanks on Elena removed and the other pieces finished? Maybe you already said this and I missed it.
On the tank project, the Nutmeg Pressure Zone projects, we will still need to bring an environmental document to our City Planning Commission once the 30% plans are complete. And then because the Nutmeg tanks are actually outside the city limits in the county, we'll need to receive a coastal development permit from the county. I would anticipate that permitting process is going to take upwards of a year to complete. If it's typical of these large planning projects. After it's completed, we would, probably during the final permitting stages, we would RFP for the final design work. That design work will take upwards of 6 months. Construction could commence probably in 18 months to 2 years once we have the 30% plan. So probably 2 years from now, we would start construction.
And that's the same for Elena, removing Elena?
Yes, so the Nutmeg tank needs to be in place before we can remove Elena. We would combine those two. There's two separate pressure zones. That's why the pressure-reducing station is required to maintain the system pressure in the Elena pressure zone, even though it's being fed from a higher elevation tank.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. Any other questions?
I have a question, and it has to do with the what was just discussed and the time savings on the two pieces of Atascadero Road. Greg, you mentioned that the way that that's going to happen will be two things happening simultaneously rather than having the road opened a second time. And so does that kind of help in the overall scheme of things now that we're hearing how long the permitting is going to take for the tanks?
Well, the tank project is a separate project, and so the Atascadero Road sewer line improvements would not require that same level of permitting. And actually, the construction could be done by our current contractor for the wharf project as a change order. So it's something that we believe we can implement very quickly.
Great. So just in overall looking at the project, there's a good timeline here, and there's a more stretched timeline on another part. So that's good.
Okay, thank you for that. Councilmember Addis, is your hand back up? Another question? No, okay, great. Just wanted to be sure. Okay, thank you for that. I will go ahead then and open up a public comment for item C-3. This is, again, public comment for item C-3 on our agenda this evening. And I'll ask AGP, do we have any public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have Betty Winholtz raising her hand here. Betty, you are unmuted.
Welcome back, Betty.
Thank you. Betty Winholtz again. Just three comments. One, it sounds like that we're spending $1 million to save $1 million, so it's kind of a wash in terms of money, in terms of the overall amendments. Second, I know that we do time and materials not to exceed, but with the wastewater treatment plant, it's been that, but we've always exceeded it, come back with amendments. So I don't know that one method is better than another, but I just want to make that observation that that kind of contract doesn't always seem to hold. And my last comment is with regard to the nutmeg tanks, I'm hoping that there is some outreach to the community. And I don't mean the community, I mean to nutmeg itself, because the size of this tank will be longer than a city block. And at one point it was going to stand up above the houses. At another point it was going to be buried and behind the houses. But I think those people that will be impacted on the east side need to be brought into the, not necessarily the discussion, but made aware. And even though you're in the planning stages, when that plan is formulated, that neighborhood needs to be informed of what's happening to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. AGP, any further public comment?
No, Mr. Mayor, we have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. With that, I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to council, and either entertain a motion or further discussion.
I'll move to approve this item.
Okay, so Councilmember Addis moves staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Barton, and I'll open it up for any further discussion before we ask for a roll call vote. Councilmember Heller, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. I think I did the mute hand, raise hand thing correctly for the first time tonight.
I just want to say with the backgrounds, when they're light, I barely can see that hand, but it's working. I'm figuring it out.
Does it work better with a blurred background?
No.
Oh, it doesn't.
You're,
oh, okay.
You're fine. You're fine.
Okay.
I'm going to do this again. Thank you. Okay.
I'm going to support this motion, but I have to say a few words about how we procure professional services. And my experience is, at least from the private sector, is that professional services are procured on a fixed dollar amount. You define the scope sufficiently enough that you're going to get what you need. You put it out for an RFP. Firms compete for it, and you award it to the lowest qualified bidder. The only time you change that fixed amount is if the owner initiates a change, which typically would have to be a significant change in the scope, at which point you negotiate an amendment. It seems that here in Morro Bay and other places, as Mr. Leibig has mentioned, use the time and materials not to exceed as a standard way to procure professional services. I think the message that sends to the design community is, let's get in there, we'll get this first contract going, and something's going to come up, and we're going to be able to go back to the city and ask for additional services, which puts the city at a disadvantage. And once you have a design consultant on board, you're not going to say, no, you can't have this, because they've already done some work, so you're in the position of negotiating amendments, and in some cases, amendments after amendments after amendments, which makes it difficult to stay on budget. So from my perspective, it's not really a good way to procure professional services. I've written these contracts. I've negotiated these contracts. And in the private sector, that's the way it's done. I think Morro Bay, the message that we send by procuring services the way that we're doing sends a weak message and opens us to paying more than we should for what we get. And as Ms. Winholtz commented, in the context of the what was promoted as a guaranteed maximum price on the water reclamation facility, which is now $10 million over budget, in that context, it reflects that I think our procurement policies need to be looked at very, very closely, and professional services would be a good place to start. Thank you.
Thanks for those comments, and I'll ask Mr. Leivick or Qualick, do you have a response to the comments? Thank you for that, Councilmember Heller, by the way, for Councilmember Heller's comments regarding time and materials types of contracts.
I'll just reiterate what I've said. It's just been my experience that agencies will typically pay more for fixed fee contracts, and there's typically much more animosity during changes. These changes that came up, we wouldn't have discovered until design commenced, and they would have been out of scope items, even on a fixed fee contract. I think we would have been in the same point. It's rather difficult to compare at this point, because you can't get a proposal for do both equally and see what you would get. But I wouldn't be opposed to proposing a fixed fee contract. They have worked in the past on other projects that I've worked on when I was in the private sector. We would enjoy working on fixed fee contracts. We made it work for the engineering firms that I've worked for. But on the public sector side, I've not had that same experience.
And thank you. I just, Councilmember Heller, during the call for any agenda items, you may want to bring up your policy review as a potential. Just noting that for you.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate that comment.
Absolutely. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I will go ahead and call for a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hitting?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you. That takes us to item C-4. This is the procedure for filling the vacancy on the City Council and selection of the method for temporary council appointment until special election is held. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Collins, I believe, this time. Thank you, Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and council members. I'm going to give a brief presentation here and turn it over for your discussion. The subject matter is to consider procedure for filling the vacancy on the City Council and selection of method for optional temporary council appointment until special election is held. We all are grieving with the loss of our former council member Red Davis, but there is business at hand to address, you know, the vacancy that's left behind, the big shoes to fill from his departure. So basically, we're looking to seek council direction regarding the option to temporarily fill the vacancy by appointment until the results of a special election are certified. Morro Bay had a Measure R passed by residents in 2016 that requires the council to call a special election to fill any vacant seat on the council. The next established election date is April 12th, 2022, and staff is researching the options for conducting a standalone election on that date or consolidating with Slo County at the June 7th, 2022 primary election. The decision before council tonight is whether to temporarily fill the vacancy by appointment, and if so, provide direction to staff on the process to be used. State law requires that appointment be made no later than 60 days from the commencement of the vacancy, which I believe was July 26th or 27th. There are no legal requirements that define a specific process. There are three alternatives that we've put forward. Of course, there are others that council could consider. But the first is to direct staff to post a notice of vacancy, set a deadline for accepting applications for appointment, and place the consideration of applicants and appointment at a meeting held prior to September 22nd, much like an advisory vacancy. The second option that we've come up with is to direct staff to post a notice of vacancy, set a deadline for accepting applications for appointment, and establish a council subcommittee to review and interview each applicant prior to making the appointment at a meeting held prior to September 22nd. And the third alternative is to place the appointment on a future agenda item, take nominations and vote until an appointment is made by affirmation vote of three members contingent on confirmation of city residency and voter registration by city clerk. The suggested timeline is with any of these options, with the exception of the third, is to post and publish notice of vacancy on the 13th of this month and then have application deadline on the 3rd of September and utilize the September 14th meeting for appointment position. So City Attorney Chris Neumeier and our City Clerk Dana Swanson can cover any of the minutiae you'd like on election law and how that works and Measure R, components as that relates to the government code. But basically what we're looking for is if you want to fill the position, it's an option. So we've got three options for you to consider. Regardless of if somebody is elected or not, we will need to host or hold a special election next year, either in April or in June, depending on kind of our analysis of that. So happy to punt any questions to those two individuals. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. We very much appreciate that. And thanks for that. I'll open it up to staff questions, or council questions, I should say, not staff questions. Councilmember Addis, I see your hand, please.
Scott, what's the cost of this special election if we have to do it in April as opposed to being able to combine it in June when I believe there's a county supervisor election? At the very least, that would be on our ballot.
Yeah, the June election would include, I believe, the primary for the governor's office and then also the Board of Supes vacancy or those seats. So Dana probably has a sense of what the cost would be to go standalone, but they would be significantly higher. But Dana might have a swing at that.
And I'm sorry, I don't have those numbers for you tonight, but it's the research we'll be doing over the next days and weeks to be sure we have bring the right alternatives to the council. We know that a standalone election would be more costly as we would need to hire a consultant to assist with that. And there would be much more staff time involved in that than there is when we consolidate with the county. And I did reach out to the county clerk recorder's office. At this point, they are unable to commit to assisting us with an April election, but they would be able to with a June election.
The figures I've heard, I'm just asking this question, if you've heard a ballpark like 35,000 or more, it feels like I've heard it's very expensive.
Yeah. Those numbers don't sound unreasonable.
Yeah, Councilmember Addis, I've worked with other clients when they've had to go forward with the standalone election, and you're looking at, 3 to 10 times the cost of a consolidated election. So the numbers you just cited, that's the ballpark, as opposed to what, Dana, it's 6,000-7,000 maybe when we consolidate?
It's a bit more than that, more like 10 to 15 for a consolidated and likely triple that for a standalone.
But we have to run an election in June no matter what, right? I mean, regardless of what the June election costs, there's an election in June that Morro Bay voters will participate in.
That's correct.
That's my only questions right now.
Okay. Thank you for that. Councilmember Heller, sir, please.
Yes, so if we wanted to, based on that, those comments, there's a three-month difference between April and June, obviously. If we wanted to, could we amend option number one and change the date and make that as a motion?
So, Councilmember Heller, that's a really good question. Right now, we are reviewing the city's options in the context of the ballot measure that was approved by city voters back in 2006, I believe it was. So, as a matter of just brief background, absent local law, when there's a vacancy and council is trying to determine whether to appoint someone or to hold a special election, under a lot of circumstances, council can just appoint someone and there is no local election, or they can call a local election. The ballot measure by the local residents many years ago requires the city to hold a special election at some point. And then the question is what date we're going to be holding that election. And so we're reviewing both that local ballot measure and state law to get a clearer picture of whether it's possible to actually do the election in June rather than April. But the assumption is that we're going to need to do it in April.
Due to the ordinance that we passed?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the latest date we could do it.
We're reviewing all of our options right now. It certainly would save the city money if we could do it in June, but we haven't finished our review yet on what the requirements of that ordinance will be for the specific date, but I can say for sure that ordinance requires us to hold an election.
Okay, so we may have to do it in April after you do your research.
Yes.
We may have to do it in April.
Yes, we may have to do it in April, and so we're going to bring back another report to council on our conclusions for options, if there are any. But we may be limited to April because of the ballot measure. Okay. We for sure need to do an election. It's possible state law might allow us to push it to June, but we still need to review that some more, and I can't give an opinion on that at this point.
Okay, thank you. That's my question.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Are there any other council questions? Councilmember Barton, do you have a question?
No questions. I'm glad to hear Chris is looking into this more deeply, because I found the what was passed before and what the path was that laid out. To me, it was a little bit convoluted, and so I'm glad there's more research going into this to make it the straightest path.
Great. Thank you for that. I didn't have any questions. It was clear to me, and thank you, staff, for your clear report. With that, I will go ahead and open up public comment. This is public comment for item C-4 on our agenda. Public comment is now open. And AGP, do we have any public comment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We do not have any public comment.
Okay. Seeing no public comment, I will close public comment on item C-4, bring it back to council. And Councilmember Addis, do you want to start us off with either a recommendation or discussion?
I would love to make a motion that we go with option A to hold applications and then make a decision at the first September meeting, I think is the way that timeline went. I don't feel the need to have a subcommittee. There's only four of us right now. And I think having an application period and then deciding in public at that September meeting is incredibly important, especially given the person that Councilmember Davis was and who we and that we're really working to fill his seat, that he was chosen by a majority of voters in Morro Bay. And one of the qualities that people spoke about him at the memorial and everywhere I go just was about his character. And so I'd love to have an open, transparent policy or procedure. So that's my motion,
question.
Is to go with A. Thank you, Jeff.
Sorry, I thought you were done.
Well, you were quick in there. Motion by Councilmember Addis for staff recommendation A to direct staff to post a notice of vacancy to set a deadline for accepting applications for appointment and place consideration of applicants and making an appointment prior to September 22nd, 2021, seconded by Council Member Heller. A question for clarification on the motion. Chris, do we need to, in the motion, actually set that deadline for accepting applications tonight? Or should we do that?
Council could definitely set a deadline. It would probably be easier for staff if there is a timeline set now. I'd defer to the city clerk who runs the elections and might have some thoughts on whether she'd like a clear deadline tonight or whether she'd like some flexibility for setting a deadline within reason.
Okay, Dana, any comments?
The proposed schedule that Mr. Collins read would allow 3 weeks to accept applications. That's about the maximum that we can allow given the September 14th appointment date. So that works for me unless the council has other preferences.
I would, if I need to amend the motion, include that date.
Okay. Jeff, is that you second that?
Yes.
Great. Second. So we have an amendment to A to set that date of, I'm sorry, Dana, what was it again?
September 3rd is the application closing date.
September 3rd is the, okay, application closing date. And that was seconded by Councilmember Heller. Any further discussion on this item?
One comment, if I might, Mayor.
Yes, please.
3 weeks is not necessarily a really, really long time. Are we going to make some attempt to promote, get this word out that this vacancy exists?
Mr. Collins or Ms. Swanson?
We will certainly use every method that we have and encourage the council to use their social media sites as well. To spread the word, and you know, local newspapers, and of course, postings in city website, all of those avenues.
Great, thank you, Dana. Mm-hmm.
Can I sneak a compliment in here, Mayor?
Yes, you can. Yes,
I just want to compliment staff because I think things are starting to change with our advisory boards. I think staff has started to implement new avenues of getting the word out, and I've seen a change on our advisory boards, and I want to appreciate that. And I actually feel pretty optimistic, given what I've seen with the advisory boards, that we'll be able to get this information out as well.
Great. Great. And Dana, again, are you clear on the motion? I just want to make sure you got the date amendment.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I just, my comment is, thank you, staff, for getting a report together so quickly to have it available to us this evening. I know with the loss of Councilmember Davis, sometimes one likes to put off thinking about these kinds of things, but I do appreciate your forethought in getting this on the agenda this evening and making this happen, so thank you for that. We do have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, may we have a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Great. Thank you for that. That brings us to item D, Council Declaration of Future Agenda Items. Councilmember Heller.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I would like to suggest that we, that staff come back with kind of a paper or some information regarding procurement options with respect to professional services as well as construction contracts and delivery methods. I don't know if that's succinct enough, but that would be my intent.
Would you like a review of the current existing policies in the city?
That would be great. That would definitely be the starting point, and then options that might be available to the city.
Okay.
Mayor, if I could add, good timing, Councilmember Heller. The new Assistant City Manager, Sarah Johnson-Rios, and I have been discussing the city's current policy that's been adopted by resolution on the policy and procedures for hiring consultants. and whether there was a need to take a look at that again. So that could dovetail with Councilmember Heller's proposal. And then the other set of regulations would be, of course, the city's purchasing ordinance. So I'd suggest that at a minimum, we could take a look at that resolution 1716 and then the purchasing ordinance consistent with Councilmember Heller's concerns.
Is that, Jeff, is that okay?
That'd be great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I would support that, absolutely. I see other heads nodding. I can't see your head nodding.
Well, Earl's head just nodded. I saw it.
It slightly moved. it sounds like you've got good.
It was nodding.
Good. Okay. Not nodding off, right?
Nodding in agreement.
Any other future agenda items for consideration? Okay. If not, the next regular meeting of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay will be held on Tuesday, August 24th, 2021 at 5:30 p.m. via teleconference. With that, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you. Be safe, be well, and have a great evening.
Rest in peace, Red.
Thank you.
Yes, and Councilmember Davis, we love you.
Thank you all.